Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Software Crowds podcast. Today with us we have Naranjani. Naranjani is an enthusiastic engineer passionate about writing code to break applications. She has worked at both startups as well established companies like eBay, Twitter, Pinterest, and now at Lyft. She strives to strike a balance between being an workaholic and a wannabe traveler who is open-minded but still likes to believe unicorns are real. Welcome to the show and thanks for your time.
Thanks for the introduction, João. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Cool. So, heuristic for today seems an easy one. Sleep easy on a green build. What is your experience and opinion about this heuristic?
I think this heuristic is pretty much my day. I work as a lead software engineer and test at Lyft, and my goal has been to ensure that all our tests that are running against our pull requests and on CI and on a scheduled basis are always green. We have like a 24-hour timeline before which we need to fix them. We need to send out, let's say, if a test fails and if the build is broken, we need to basically go take a look at why it failed and send out an email to all the developers letting them know, hey, this is being looked at. We're trying to fix why it failed. And then within a couple of hours, we try to figure out and come up with a solution as to why it failed, how do we fix it. And if it was an actual bug, yes, we raise the bug and let our developers know and ask them to get it fixed. But if it was a test issue, then obviously we try to quarantine the test. Given, if it was just a flaky test, then we would end up quarantining the test. Otherwise, we would try to fix the test. If it was a pretty straightforward fix, then we would, because half the time, at least I've realized, tests don't fail just because, the environment is not good, it's not flaky, or it's probably because the test data is not available, or because issues like, hey, you did not create the test data properly in the first place. Like, for example, in our case, we need to make sure driver and rider accounts are available while trying to run, the scenario where you're trying to match a driver and passenger. And we realized it's hard to do. It's a hard problem because you're trying to have two different apps online while trying to write this test. And then we resorted to mocking, which solved a lot of our problems, because at the end of the day, we wanted to just verify the UI. And so we mocked the responses of driver in order to test the rider. And similarly, we mocked the response of the rider or the passenger when we want to test the driver app. So I think these kind of refactoring helped us get to a stage where we have much more stable and green builds all the time. Our tests are passing all the time. But yeah, it's taken us close to 2.5 years to get there. But I think we've also shifted left and shifted right to get there. I know a lot of emphasis is being given to shifting right these days, which is nothing but test ops, similar to DevOps. And I think that totally makes sense, because if you want to have a green build, sure, writing a stable test is essential. At the same time, you can't be writing a test for a situation where it should have probably been an observability tool there or a monitoring tool to indicate that something was amiss. You shouldn't be waiting for a test to fail to indicate that to you. So I think those are also essential. So that is why, over the past few years, we've definitely shifted left and right to get to a point where you can sleep peacefully on green pills.
Yeah, that is important, and I'm really curious about the journey. So I was taking notes, and you talk about the journey, right? You told us a bit about the details that you did lots of tests that can be classified as integration, and then the data is flaky sometimes because things change too fast, and then you opt to go to mocking some parts and using this type of techniques. And I was really interested, what were the decision points as a team where you start feeling the friction and start looking to other engineering alternatives to achieve the same quality without the pain?
Sure. So when we started off, at least almost 3 years ago at Lyft, obviously there wasn't any automation in place. So the goal was to first gain the confidence of our development team, as well as our testing team to and our release team to rely on our tests to give faster feedback. So at that point, we only focused on adding super high priority test cases. We automated those and then got everyone to start relying on these tests and not just on manual testing. And once we got to that stage, like our developers were starting to trust the test. It was not like it was flaky. And then we started focusing on, okay, sure, the tests aren't necessarily flaky, but we do have some failures. Why do they fail? And then when we dig deeper, we realized, hey, sure, this test failed because we're trying to verify a driver trying to, cancel a ride, because the scenario was to ensure the driver was able to cancel a ride if he's not able to make it. But when we keep doing that multiple times, the driver gets whitelisted or blacklisted, saying, hey, this driver has been canceling so many rides, so we want to prevent this person from being, he's available, but then when people request, he's not available to take them on a ride. So we were running into those kind of scenarios, and we realized, oh, wow, but this is not exactly a test failure. This is because of test data issue. So how do we fix that? And then we came up with the concept of a test data engine, where the goal was to generate test users on a daily basis. So on a given day, we probably run our tests, like 100 times at the max, because if it's going to run on every single PR and whatnot, maybe 100 times. But then we have these cron jobs that are run every couple of hours. So these cron jobs ensure that the user is currently not in use, and if the user is not in use, then it would basically delete the user, and then we recreate the user before the next test run. So this way, we realized we prevented those conflicting situations where, hey, the driver was not in a good state, or if the passenger continuously gets on a ride and gets dropped off in between, or he's trying to do something funky in between, then we start blacklisting the passenger too. So this way we were able to avoid that situation. And then we also, then we realized, okay, now we got this right. So let's move on to the next challenge, where we were trying to match driver and passenger in a ride. And then we realized, this is again hard because we're trying to test on staging where everybody is testing. Like you could have a manual tester testing if a driver and passenger can be matched. And then we also have developers testing some of their recent changes. And your automated test could potentially get matched with a driver or passenger on staging, like someone else testing. And then your tests would end up in a weird state because they're trying to test something different. Your test is trying to do something else. Again, testing in a shared environment caused this kind of a problem. And the best way to solve this was to go for mocking, and that's how we ended up mocking request responses, and that helped us to stabilize a complex scenario, like having to match a driver and passenger successfully every single time, so that you can only verify your UI and not worry about the other pieces or the network piece that could potentially harm your test run. So That was the next step. And then we realized, great, I think we've reached the pristine state where everything is perfect. But then we ran into other situations, interesting scenarios where a test failed, which was an actual failure, but then it was because a specific service was down. It was not our mistake. So we were like, oh, why is this down? How did we run into the situation? Why could not, we should have been able to detect that even prior to a test failing. Like, we shouldn't have to wait for a test to fail to indicate that a specific service was down, which means we don't have proper monitoring in place. That is why this is happening. So big picture, we did not just narrow down to a test. This was a different problem. And what is the dependent problem here? And then we realized, we didn't have proper observability or monitoring in place. And that's when that led to a team actually being formed. Like, it was probably just one person who was responsible, given it was, Lyft was in a very early stages. And then we realized, no, this, we really need someone, a huge team responsible for this, because this is not necessarily a testing related issue. But we found this, and we think it can be solved by having more monitoring and observability capability added, so that we don't have to be the stalwarts letting the company know, hey, the service is down. Sure, it is important in the case where you're doing mainly like a contract test to detect that. But this is more, we're doing it at a UI layer. And for that, I don't think our test should be the ones indicating it. Instead, we should have proper monitoring in place. And then that's how more monitoring in place was, came into the picture, where Kibana, we helped improve Kibana and Grafana. And then we started setting up a dashboard based off of our CI runs. And we realized that also helped the team to monitor the overall test and the build status. Like, if something fails, immediately the graph shows up, and then even our managers are able to track and tell us, hey, why something is failing, or why is there a steep spike in the time taken to run this specific build, what's going on? Or so I think those factors helped us. Like, over a period of time, I think we were able to go back to our build and release team and ask them, hey, I think for the past week we noticed the build time had increased. Why did that even happen? And then they come back saying, oh yeah, that's interesting. We added a bunch of libraries to our app, which ended up taking up more time to get, for every single build, we were trying to download all these jar files before doing the actual build. And then that is when we realized our test execution time was basically close to, I don't know, for 100 tests, it would probably take 20 minutes. But then the build time took another 25 minutes. So the overall Jenkins or whatever CI system you can be using, the entire test runtime would be close to 45 minutes, which is insane. Like, why is this so high? Why do we have to wait 45 minutes to get feedback on, say, a specific new UI change happened, and they have to wait 45 minutes? That's crazy. And then that's when we spoke to our build team and tried to figure out, okay, how can we improve this? What can be done? Why is it taking longer? And then that led to the build team trying to come up with an Artifactory, where for every single build, they don't have to go all over the network and try to download everything. Instead, we built a in-house Artifactory where it would already have all these relevant versions that the team is using. And that way we avoided that extra time taken to download all these files. So long story short, I think I have been talking a lot about the entire process, but this is how we got to a stage where now everything runs in under, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes, like along with the build as well as test runs. So this is how we were able to improvise and make the entire process more efficient.
Yeah, but this is a nice story, right? Because when I usually talk about quality assurance, people think, oh, those people that go to automate tests. No, it's about this holistic approach from what is the next constraint, right? Your story start, okay, actually we need to automate tests, done. Oh, now we are growing and now things don't match. Oh, and now we are on a shared, and this is just perfect, right? It's just perfect for people to understand that there is a journey, right? Mm-hmm. The famous T-shape and now also pops up pie-shaped types of engineering actually is a journey, and it's very good to have some degree of specialization because then we can remove. And also what I love in your story was domain knowledge part. Right. Start to doing and then, oh, the tests are failing. Oh, we didn't account for domain, well, domain behavior, right? You have these type of blocking lists and unblocking lists to, well, prevent bad actors in the system, which is very, very interesting. How come we can learn and get this domain knowledge right, you know? But I also really like, and perhaps this is the next question, do you already test in production or do something with chaos engineering or this type of stuff that go to the far left, far right part of the pipeline?
I think in my current role, we are still striving to get to that stage. Again, because it is more of a limitation in terms of how we can control our test data. But in my previous role, I think back at Pinterest, we were able to achieve it way more easily. Like we were able to run our tests in staging, pre-prod, and production, mainly because of the fact that we were able to whitelist our users very easily. And, you know, even if you have a test user using Pinterest, like going, scrolling through your feed and tapping on pins and adding to boards, it doesn't necessarily affect the actual users. But whereas at Lyft, if you're trying to have a test driver, what if the test driver ends up getting matched with an actual passenger who's trying to request a ride and maybe they're in kind of some kind of emergency? So we don't want to mess up that system. So it's a little complicated here because of the product and how things are wired. We're still trying to get there. But yeah, in my previous role, we were able to do that way more successfully. And we would literally say a user, there is a flag which we assign to a user. And if that flag is marked as test, then certain capabilities were removed from the user, so they wouldn't be visible for someone, for an actual user, unless they are an employee of Pinterest, they wouldn't be able to see. So we were able to control those factors. So it was very easy for us to run our tests. It was just like a flip of switch in the back end when you say, hey, run these tests in production and use these kind of users, and that's about it. So I think, like I said, making sure you're able to test in production or making sure test automation is seamless is much more possible if you look at the whole system. It's a holistic approach. It cannot be narrowed down to saying, hey, I'm just testing. I don't care about anything. It is very hard to narrow that down. And So shifting right was way more possible because we were able to control our test data. Because at the end of the day, if you want to write stable tests, you need to be able to control what your data, how your data is being generated and what are the variables associated with the data. Because half the time, especially at startups, most of the features are in experimental mode. So these experiments get turned on randomly, like suddenly for 10% of the user base, and then your tests would be behaving differently because this user is part of a bucket. So we were able to control that at Pinterest, again, because we had a feature flag, like a toggle switch for those users, where we could say, if this user is a test user, then don't add them to any of these experimental buckets. So that was easier for us to control how we want our tests to behave and how, I think we were just confining all the variables and putting them under a specific boundary. So that helped us to shift left and right seamlessly.
Yeah, and I see the inception case here, right? Because I was writing down testing in an A/B testing scenario, which is inception, right? Going down the right with all, which is very interesting. And I also was in your recent journey that you talk about. You talk about observability and your teams or teams around figure out, oh, now we have dependencies, and sometimes dependencies are here, sometimes are not. Let's add more observability and turn things around, which led to more autonomy to the teams, which also it's very interesting about this empowerment of the teams. Hey, look, folks, here is a set of tools that now you can manage your landscape. Do you see also the organization and even the industry going more on that direction?
Going more in which direction? Sorry, I think
in the direction of empowering teams, right? The journey that you described, that your team figured out that dependency management was not up to par, and that's why the company introduced monitoring, which in the end empowered teams to manage their own.
Correct.
Right? And the question is, do you see around us in the industry, because also you have TEPs in communities, that we have more and more of this behavior of trying to empower teams?
Right. True. No, I think I would definitely agree. It was mainly because it was possible because my upper management, my manager, my director were also open to hearing that feedback. Based off of my experience, I've realized, most of the time the problem is not just within the quality team, because there's a lot of dependencies with other teams and there's a lot of cross-platform dependencies involved. And unless we reach out, those teams were also not aware. And this also helped, the entire company. Like, it improved logging, it improved monitoring and observability and analytics. So it was definitely crucial for the company. So I think teams are open and they empower other teams to help each other. It's just that you need to position your problem statement in a way that they understand that this is going to help, the overall good for the world and not just testing, because in this case, I think it's also about communicating to other teams, helping them understand how it can help their team as well if we improve this. So that's how it came about, because at the end of the day, it was more like, hey, we need to improve our test automation. And my managers were like, how do we do this? Tell me, what do you want? How can we help you to get there? And then we were like, yeah, there are these dependencies. How do we go about doing this? And then they were like, yes, let's get in touch with those managers and let them know that this is something that's blocking us from proceeding. So that's how we were able to achieve it. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, very interesting. And how do you see, because you are inside of testing community, right? And you tell us a very interesting journey. How do you see our industry evolves in the testing space? What are your forecasting predictions in the next 2-5 years? Where are we going?
I think we are definitely moving towards using or leveraging AI and ML. So I'm reading a lot about AI and ML ops also coming up. I think some companies have already started to practice it. It cannot replace testing per se. It's more to help us move faster. Like in the case where if you involve AI and ML, for example, you don't need a human being to sit in quarantine tests. Instead, you can write a script that would do it for you. And all as a human, as a tester or an automation engineer, your focus is more on, hey, is this test automatable in the first place? Because it consists of a bunch of redundant steps that we automated, make it easier. It'll help developers get faster feedback. And then your script takes care of figuring out, is this test even flaky? Or is this because of a different issue? It comes up and gives you a recommendation saying, hey, this test was flaky because of test environment, or it's test data, lack of test data, proper test data. And then, the human being behind the scenes basically goes and fixes it. So I think that is the direction we're moving. So that way, the system starts recommending to us based on everything. It analyzes, does all the work, and then we just need to plug in things in the right manner. I think that's the direction we're moving, which is great. It'll help us move faster, even more faster.
Definitely, definitely. And I it's interesting because last year I saw a demo of a tool around that they scan the environments, look to test results and start with prediction. Hey, look, that part of your test suite, it might be have some problems. You might want to look there, which is pretty cool, especially on highly complex environments, right? You work at eBay in the past, you don't know where the system starts and where the system ends. Because it's
so
big, you don't know.
Dependencies. Yes, exactly.
Right? I can imagine with Pinterest, it's easier, although high volume, but it's not eBay, it's not Google, it's not Amazon, right? Because you don't know where things start and end. Right? Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting one. And do you think that the communities and the industry are ready to start adopting more AI and ML, or we are not there yet?
I think the change is coming very slowly. I think it's going to take us a while because, like you mentioned, there are a couple of tools springing up here and there, but I don't think they are easily pluggable into an environment. Like, they need to be customized according to the company. So at this point, it is more of a POC stage, a proof of concept stage. So I think it'll take us a few more years to get there. And also the fact that, not all companies recognize, like, everybody agrees shifting left is important. I think shifting right is still, we're still in the process of, we're literally in the middle of it. So slowly companies are understanding that importance. And these days, even when you look at job descriptions, they say, hey, great, you need to have automation skills, but we would also expect you to have Docker skills or understand your CI/CD system, because they realize that is definitely critical for the role, because that will help you as a quality engineer move faster, because if you have a better understanding of the test ops side of the world. But it's a slow transition, I guess, because, remember, when we had waterfall and people started moving to agile, that's taken such a long time for everybody to adapt to agile. And now I can hardly find any company that actually follows waterfall model anymore. But then now we're moving towards DevOps, test ops, and then eventually to AI and ML ops, which is definitely going to take longer. Companies are starting to realize that, though, which is a good sign.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. I think that we will be around to see that shift. We will make that shift possible as people in the industry. Cool. So we are getting towards the end of the interview. What are the resources that you recommend? Books, podcasts, blogs, videos, whatever that can help our audience with their journey?
Sure. I have a few recommendations. I think Leading Quality, that was one of the great books that I had read recently. It empowers quality engineers to think beyond the box. And it talks a lot about industry experiences. And I think we also talked a little bit about team topologies, understanding, how team organizations and whatnot. So that helped me understand, like, hey, you should never be stuck within the testing quality space. Is something beyond that. Try to understand how inter-team collaboration could help your job as well. And there are a few other people I follow, like their blogs. I think Liz Fong, I think she used to be a SRE at Google, and she's also recently written a book. Her blogs are been very helpful for me to understand observability and monitoring and how I understood the big picture idea of how those all fit into the overall pipeline better. And I've also been following Boz. He used to be one of the founding engineers at Facebook back in 2006, and now he's a VP of AR, VR at Facebook. He also writes very interesting articles. I can share links to their blogs as well. That'll be helpful.
Cool. We will make sure that your recommendations are on the description of this episode. And with these, we get to an end, as every episode. And I want to thank you once again for your time and availability to share with us your opinions and your journeys. It's always a learning opportunity, at least for myself.
Thank you, Joe. I really enjoy chatting with you. I definitely can't believe we passed the time for the podcast, but definitely enjoyed this chat. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Thanks. You can follow us on Twitter at SCraftsPodcast. Visit our website, softwarecraftspodcast.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn. Hope to get you next week.